The following is a Sunday feast lecture on Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 5, text number 18, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari, recorded on July 5th, 2009, in Wellington, New Zealand.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 5, text number 18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Vidya Vinaya Sampane,
Brahmane Gavihastani,
Shuni Chaiva Shvapake Cha,
Pandita Samadarshina,
Vidya Vinaya Sampane,
Brahmane Gavihastini,
Shuni Chaiva Shvapake Cha,
Pandita Samadarshina.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog-eater outcast. Purport. A Krishna-conscious person does not make any distinction between species or castes. The Brahmin and the outcast may be different from the social point of view, or a dog, a cow, or an elephant may be different from the point of view of species, but these differences of body are meaningless from the viewpoint of a learned transcendentalist. This is due to their relationship to the Supreme, for the Supreme Lord, by His plenary portion as Paramatma, is present in everyone's heart. Such an understanding of the Supreme is real knowledge. As far as the bodies are concerned, in different castes or different species of life, the Lord is equally kind to everyone because He treats every living being as a friend, yet maintains Himself as Paramatma, regardless of the circumstances of the living entities. The Lord, as Paramatma, is present both in the outcast and in the Brahmana, although the body of a Brahmana and that of an outcast are not the same. The bodies are material productions of different modes of material nature, but the soul and the supersoul within the body are of the same spiritual quality. The similarity in the quality of the soul and the supersoul, however, does not make them equal in quantity. But the individual soul is present only in that particular body, whereas the Paramatma is present in each and every body. A Krishna-conscious person has full knowledge of this, and therefore he is truly learned and has equal vision. The similar characteristics of the soul and supersoul are that they are both conscious, eternal, and blissful. But the difference is that the individual soul is conscious within the limited jurisdiction of a body, whereas the supersoul is conscious of all bodies. The supersoul is present in all bodies without distinction.
Vandeham. Sri Guru. Sri Jata Pada Kamala Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupa Sagrajata Sagana Raghunatandrita Damsa Jeeva Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha
So many people nowadays, they want to equate the individual soul with the Supreme Soul. It's a very popular idea. They take the Vedic statement, Aham Brahmasmi, which means I am spirit soul. They take that to mean I am God. I am the Supreme. But that is not a fact. It is very nicely explained here by Srila Prabhupada. The individual soul is conscious within his own body. But he is not conscious within others' body. The Supreme Soul, he is conscious within everything. Of everything that's going on. He's absolutely conscious of everything. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjana vavishchani chabhutani mangtu veda nakashchana. Krishna says, O Arjuna, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. I know everything that has happened in the past, everything that's happening right now, and everything that's going to be happening in the future. I also know all living entities, but me, no one knows. So, if the individual living entity wants to claim to be God, he must have perfect knowledge of everything, past, present, and future. Many years ago, when I was a young brahmachari, I used to preach at the University of Florida in the mid-70s. In those days, it was a real fad on the college campuses to declare oneself to be God. Mayavadi philosophy was very popular in those days on the college campuses. So I was preaching there every day, and I was meeting so many incarnations of God on the campus. And I would ask them, well, tell me when I was born then, if you were God. And they couldn't say. One boy came to our temple and said, I am God. So our temple president, he said, well, you know, when God was here, he lifted a mountain on his little finger for 7 days. So when you lift our temple, we'll be very easy on you. If you can just lift this temple, we'll accept that you're God. And he said, actually, we'll be even more, make it more easy if you can, they had a little Volkswagen bug, you know. little green Volkswagen bug, beetles they call them. If you can just lift our Volkswagen on your little finger, we'll accept that you're God. Again, the boy was baffled. And finally he said, he was thinking he would finally defeat us. He said, just look into my eyes. So in this way, you see, when they want to claim to be God, they make God some cheap thing, you see. When I was a spiritual seeker back in, it must have been 1967 or something like that, I went to hear one Swamiji. He said, I am God, you are God, we are all God. So this is the bogus nonsense going on. They are thinking that they are God. Actually, I read one book also. When I first was looking for spiritual knowledge, Indian spiritual knowledge, because the Christian tradition didn't give me what I was looking for. I was raised in that Christian tradition. But I was looking for knowledge from the yogis, the rishis, the sadhus from India. And I came across one book. It was called The Book. The Book. And the subtitle was On the Taboo Against Knowing Who You Are. So this book explained that actually you are God. But right now you're simply playing hide and go seek with yourself. You simply have to come out of hiding, you see, and be God once again. So I tried it. For a couple of days I was feeling really great. Wow! But then when things didn't go exactly the way that I wanted them to go, the whole illusion came crashing down. And it was finished, you see. They say that actually you are God, but you forgot, that's all. Now all you have to do is remember once again that you are the Supreme Person. But is that logical? I ask you, is that logical? If you are God, how you could forget you are God? You understand? That would mean that forgetfulness is greater than God. That means forgetfulness is God. Forget you, forgetfulness is God. Because it has overpowered you. God cannot be overpowered by anything or anyone. That is God. So in this way we have to understand the absurdity of this I am God, you are God philosophy. One of these so-called gurus, he wanted to show that yes, I am better than all the other gurus who claim that they are God. He said, I do not say, aham brahmasmi. I say, tatvamasmi, you are God. In this way they can think, oh, Guruji is so humble. He doesn't say that he's God. He just says that we are God. So he's the greatest guru, you see. Again, it's another cheating business, you see. Simply cheating. As I explained last night, God wants to be his own servant because that is actually more relishable for him than to be the Supreme Person himself. So why hanker to be God when God himself wants to be the servant of God? When God himself wants to be a Hare Krishna, why not take hint and become a Hare Krishna devotee, you see? Of course, we're not speaking sectarian here. Joining some religious cult, we're not saying that. What we are saying is that there is a science of the soul in relationship with the Supreme Soul. Try to understand that science. This is what we are speaking of here. Mm-hmm. Just like there is a universal principle. It's scientific universal principle. The part always serves the whole in its healthy state. The part serves the whole. It's like this body, you see. If my hand is working properly and it serves the function of the complete body, or this little MP3 recorder which is recording this lecture, you see, If every part of the system, the microphone, the wires, the adapter plug here, the machine itself, everything is working properly, each part of this system is serving the complete system. So that is a universal principle. The part always serves the whole. You see. So, each and every one of us can scientifically, logically, philosophically analyze ourselves, that we are part of the complete whole. Can anyone here claim they are the complete whole? Can anyone make that claim that you are the complete whole? You are everything and everything is you? You see? No one can make that claim. It's not possible. But Krishna can make that claim. He can get away with it. Because he's omniscient. He knows everything about everything. He's connected with everything. Actually, everything is the energy of Krishna. Aham sarvasya prabhava matak sarvam pravartate iti madva bhajante vang buddha bhava samanvita. I am the source, Krishna says, of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. So everything we see here in Wellington, everything we see in New Zealand or Australia, or all over this whole planet, even if you could travel throughout the entirety of outer space, everything you see, everything that you would see, would be the energy of Krishna. There's nothing that exists outside of the energy of Krishna. There is no nothing beyond that. The energy of Krishna includes everything. So that is Krishna in his expanded form, you see, is the total existence. The total existence is simply nothing but the energy of Krishna. So we are part of that emanation. We are energy of that absolute supreme person. That is our actual identity. So therefore, being the part of that supreme person, we are by nature meant to serve him. Of course, we have an option. We can serve him or we can choose not to serve him. Love me or leave me, you see. We have that choice. Why does Krishna endow us with that choice? Because he doesn't want to associate with robots. If I said, well, here we're going to give you a nice family. You'll have a wife, you'll have kids. Give you a wonderful, wonderful family, and they're all robots. They're just programmed robots. You know, they have no ability to think or to act independently. Just they're programmed robots, that's all. Would that be very interesting? Here's your new bride. She's a very beautiful robot, you see. Actually, when I was a kid, there was a TV show called The Twilight Zone. Now, of course, we don't watch TV now. It's a waste of time, but I didn't know better then. The movement hadn't even come to America yet, where I was living. So there was one show about, called one program, one episode in The Twilight Zone. Some man, he was somehow had landed on some planet in outer space, and he was the only one on this planet. But he had one associate, a very, very beautiful woman. And he was very happy in that relationship. But then someone came to rescue him on that planet from his being stranded on that desolate planet somewhere in outer space. And he told him, "This okay, let's go now. This is just a robot. It's not really a person." He couldn't believe it. He was... So the person, he did something, he took a gun or something and shot that, and all the wires came out. It was just a machine. You know, the springs and wires came out, and it was obviously just a machine. That was the end of the show. He'd been associating with a robot the whole time, thinking it was a person, you see. So Krishna, he doesn't want robots. He wants persons who have a choice to serve him or not to serve him, because then it makes life very interesting, you see. So Krishna emanates all these living entities from himself for the purpose of having a loving relationship with them. Therefore, he gives each and every one of these countless numbers of living entities the choice to love him or to leave him, to serve him or not to serve him. That is called free will, you see, independence. As Krishna is supremely independent, each part and parcel of him has a minute degree of independence, just as a drop of ocean water possesses the same chemical composition as the ocean is the complete total ocean. So the complete total personality of Godhead has so many parts and parcels which share the same qualities that he has, you see, which are eternity, knowledge, bliss, and also independence. So since we have that independent nature, we can either use it or we can misuse it. Now many people say, well, this is a flaw in God's creation, that there's a possibility you could misuse your independence, you see. He should make us in such a way that we cannot misuse our independence. That's the argument. But then again, it's back to robots again. You see. Would you like to be a robot? Anybody volunteer to become, have some special ritual, we can turn you into a robot? Anybody would like to volunteer to become a robot? No, no one wants to be a robot. We don't want to be robots. Krishna doesn't want us to be robots. So, therefore, we, by God's arrangement, we have the free will to love him or to leave him. And you may say, okay, I had that free, I can understand I have the free will, but how could anybody in their, how could anybody who's in the spiritual world, which is experiencing eternity, knowledge, and bliss, ever choose to leave the spiritual world? It doesn't make sense. We hear that argument again and again. It doesn't make any sense. How can anybody want to leave, you see? Absolutely doesn't make sense, they say. It doesn't make sense to me how anybody could ever want to leave that spiritual world. Well, look at it like this. There has to be a possibility of leaving, right? Otherwise you're just a robot. There has to be a possibility of leaving. And if there's a possibility of leaving, there has to be some probability, right? If there's no probability, there's no possibility. And if there's no possibility, it's back to being a robot again. So not being a robot means there's a possibility, which means there's some degree of probability, even though it would be 1 over infinity, obviously, if you look at it mathematically. It'd be the smallest percentage you could even imagine, you know. 0.00000000, an infinite number of zeros, and a little one way out there at the end of the infinite number of zeros. 1 over infinity, you see. So that would be the odds of somebody, you know, leaving the spiritual world. 1 over infinity. Well, what if you take that 1 over infinity and you apply it to infinity? You take the smallest possible fraction, the most infinitesimally small fraction that could ever be made, and you apply that against the infinite number of limitings in the spiritual world. What is the smallest possible percentage of infinity? It's infinity. Therefore, we have an infinite number of living entities here in this material world. Even though it's an infinitesimally small fraction of the total number of living entities, we still have an infinite number of living entities here in this material world who misuse their independence. And guess what? You are one of them, and I am one of them. We're in that number that made the mistake. The beauty of it is, though, that Krishna loves us. We're very dear to him. We're his beloved children. So even though we made the mistake, he didn't abandon us. He agreed to come with us. Now, just try to understand what a great friend is Krishna, you see. As he can be, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. Krishna says he's the best friend of all living entities. So just think of how good a friend he is. Now, if you have a friend, your dearmost friend, and he's arrested, and he's put into prison, you would go visit him every now and then, right? Because you're a good friend. But would you go and live with him in the prison? Would you go do... If he had a 30-year sentence, would you go spend 30 years sitting with him in the cell? Is it? No, we're not that good friends here in this material world. But Krishna is that good of a friend. You see. He comes into each and every one of us as the super soul. And we're staying in so many varieties of prison cells, you see.
Jalaja Navalakshani Stavara Lakshavingshati Krimio Rudd Sankhya Ka Pakshinam Dashalakshanam Trinsha Lakshani Pashavaha Chatur Lakshani Manashaha. You know that shloka from the Vishnu Purana? Yeah. Describes the number of species. Jalaja Navalakshani. You see, there's 9 lakhs of living entities who are Jalaja, born in the water. Ja means born and Jala is water. 900,000 species born in the water. And then it lists the plants, you see, stavara, those that don't move, that are stationed, sta, you see, it's like the word stationed. Stationed in one place, stavara, you see. Like a vingshati, and then it goes on listing. Kramaya rudra, the insects and reptiles. Pakshinam, the birds, you see. And then chatur lakshani, I mean to say tringsha lakshani, the pashava, the beasts, and then chatur lakshani manushaha, the humankind. You see. So there are so many varieties of prison cells within this prison of material existence. 8,400,000 different types of prison cells, you see. And that Supreme Person, He is so kind that He comes and does time with us in all of these millions of lifetimes as the Supreme Person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Paramatma, His manifested, expanded form. Just to try to induce us to come back to Him. Krishna is so kind, He expands as the Paramatma within our hearts, just to induce us to come back. And at the same time, if we're not ready to come back, He's even so kind, He'll give us facility how to enjoy this material world. If you're not inclined to surrender to Krishna, that same Supreme Person within your heart will give you intelligence how to try to enjoy this material world. If you want to rob a bank, He'll give you the intelligence how to do it, you see. That Supreme Person is neutral. In this way, He'll facilitate, just like a parent, you know. He wants the child to be good, but He loves the child and regardless, and even facilitate the child wanting to do things that are not so intelligent sometimes. The parent will facilitate out of affection. So, that Supreme Affectionate Personality of Godhead, He very kindly takes care of His beloved children. But He is always hoping, waiting, and wishing that they will decide to give up this quagmire of material sense gratification and come back to the eternal position as servants of the Supreme Person in the spiritual sky. So, as soon as that living being becomes frustrated with material existence and wants to know what is the absolute truth, I'm tired of being kicked around by the modes of material nature. I'm tired of going through birth, death, old age and disease, suffering so many miseries. I'm sick and tired of it. I want to know, what is the absolute truth? As soon as the living entity becomes inclined in this way, then that Supreme Person, who is called the Paramatma, is also called Chaitya Guru, the Guru within the heart. That Guru within the heart, He then manifests externally as the bona fide spiritual master. So actually, you don't have to seek a Guru. All you have to do is desire the Absolute Truth, and then Krishna will send the spiritual master to you to reveal to you what is the Absolute Truth. And if you're ready, if you're really serious to know what is that absolute truth, the spiritual master will speak words which will penetrate deep, 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 deeply into your heart and plant the seed of spiritual enlightenment there. You see. And if you will take advantage of having that seed planted in your heart by watering that seed, by weeding the garden of your heart, to not let that seed become overpowered by the weeds, and protecting that seed from any foreign elements like a mad elephant that might come tramping through the garden of the heart. In this way, if you take very good care of that seed, then it will fructify.
And you become a fully self-realized being, you see. So what is that watering process? That is chanting the holy names of God. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And what are the weeds? Those are illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication and gambling. And what is that elephant that tramples through the garden? That is to be offensive towards the Vaishnavas, the devotees of the Lord. So if we can protect ourselves by against being offensive by always appreciating and loving all the devotees, even if they are neophytes and they have so many bad habits or what have you, if we can always see the good in all of the devotees. And actually a devotee, he sees this in every living being. So we are studying this verse, Pandita Samadarshanaha. He sees the good in all living beings, you see. Because he sees actually the whole world, everyone is a devotee, but it's just covered right now. That's everyone's a devotee. So in this way, the advanced devotee, you see, he appreciates everyone. Now, the serious neophyte, at least he is careful not to think badly about the Vaishnavas. He wants to see the good qualities in all the Vaishnavas. So in this way, he avoids being offensive towards the Vaishnavas, always appreciating their wonderful saintly qualities. And he carefully avoids sinful activity and the activities, and he regularly chants the holy names of God. In this way, he advances very, very nicely on the pathway under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master. And he regains his lost position as an eternal associate of the Supreme Person in his eternal pastimes. He actually regains his original identity, which he had before he fell into this material existence. And he tastes the sweetest happiness in that eternal relationship with the Supreme Person. So that's available for everybody. Doesn't matter what is your qualification or disqualification. If one takes advantage of the mercy of a bona fide spiritual master, then everyone can achieve that position. Regain their original eternal identity in the pastimes of the Supreme Person in the spiritual world. It's just a matter of your desire. Do you want it? Do you want to realize your eternal, all-knowing, all-blissful nature? Or do you want to remain in a temporary, miserable, ignorant position? Which do you want? Eternity, knowledge, and bliss? Or temporality, misery, and illusion? What's more appealing? You have your choice. No one is forcing. We're just simply giving. You see, this is not actually a religious cult that we're trying to convert you. No. We are simply an educational institution. We want to educate you as to what your choices are, so then you can do what you want. Krishna did not force Arjuna to surrender to him. He said, now that I explain this to you, you can do what you like. He gave him full freedom. He didn't force him that, oh, you must surrender to me. No. He said, here's the choices. Now do what you like. So we just want you to be educated so you know, what your choices are. You can make an educated choice. Would I like to remain in material existence, trying to enjoy this temporary bag made of mucus, bile, stool, urine, pus, and blood? Or would I like to regain my original, all-blissful, all-knowing nature as the servant of the Supreme Person in his eternal pastimes in that wondrous spiritual sky? What would I prefer? Everyone has their choice. So now that we've given you the choice, now you do what you like. You see, do what you like. You can do exactly what you want. I hope you'll make the right choice, but it's up to you. You see, I'd like, when I go back to Godhead, I'd like to see all of you there. You see, it'd be very nice if I can see all of the people here and. Everyone can be, we can all be together in the spiritual world. It'd be very nice if we can all be together in Krishna's pastimes, you see. But again, it's up to you. If you'd rather stay here, no one's going to force you. If you prefer this place to the eternal abode of the Supreme Person, where life is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, you don't have to worry about working, going to work, you don't have to worry about getting sick, you don't have to worry about paying any bills. Don't worry about anything, you see. Here there's so many anxieties. This is called Kunta, the world of anxieties. This world of Kunta, this is Kunta Dham, the abode which is full of anxiety. But there's Vai means without, Vai Kunta Dham, that world which is completely free of all anxiety. So you have your choice. You want to remain in a world of anxiety? Okay. No one's going to force. But if you want to remain, go to that world which is free of anxiety, we are prepared to give you all instruction, all information, all blessings, all help, all encouragement, all facility we are willing, prepared to give you. And we won't even charge you any money. These bogus gurus, they charge you money. I went to one bogus guru for a so-called mantra. He charged me 1 month's rent. 1 month's rent money. I had to pay for my mantra. And you know what? It didn't even work. And there was no money back guarantee. I got ripped off for 1 month's rent. He gave me one mantra. Aing, 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 aing. 1 month's rent for aing. He's making a big profit. He became a millionaire. The yogi became a millionaire. Multi-millionaire. Actually, this yogi became multi-millionaire. Selling mantras. You see? Mantra salesman. You see? But we do not sell you this mantra, you see. Srila Prabhupada did not charge us for this mantra. And he told us we should also not try to make money off of selling this mantra. Prabhupada told us that we should, I've freely given, now you freely give to the whole world this Krishna consciousness, this Hare Krishna mantra. So we are giving you the supreme mantra, as confirmed in the the Kali Santarana Upanishad, yes. That there is no, if you look through all the Vedas, you won't find any mantra more powerful, more effective, more potent, more uplifting, with more shakti than this Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we don't chant Hare Krishna because we are Hare Krishnas. No, that would be a cult. We chant Hare Krishna because it is scientifically proven to be the most powerful, effective method of delivering one's consciousness from all anxieties and from all illusion. That's why we chant Hare Krishna. That's why. If there was some other mantra which is better, we would chant that. If we could chant parking meter, parking meter, parking meter, we would do that. You see? We'll chant anything. We don't care. Whatever is most powerful and most effective to deliver us from birth and death, that we will chant. That's all. We are not sectarianists. We are scientists. You understand? So in this way, try to understand what is this Krishna consciousness movement and take full advantage of it for going back to home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. I can now inquire if there's any questions. Yes.
Maharaj, I've got a question. You said that everything comes out of Krishna. How about the slaughterhouses and people who kill for their own pleasure? Does it also
that is all within Krishna's energy also. They wanted to forget God, so he's given them full facility. All right. You want to forget me? All right. I'll let you go deep, deep, deep into illusion and darkness because that's what you want. All right. Here, take it.
Yes.
The answer is this. And Lord Chaitanya has said, Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Kavitam Vajagadisha Kamaye, Mama Janmani Janmadishvare, Bhavatat Bhakti Rahaiti Kitwe. I don't desire any type of material sense gratification. I don't need wealth, women, or followers. I don't even need liberation from birth and death. There's one thing and one thing only, and I need, and that is service to the Supreme Person. So, that is the perfection of consciousness. To not even desire going back home, back to Godhead. Of course, that's what qualifies one to go back immediately. That move. But the one who becomes perfect in Krishna consciousness, he's fully happy and he's fully satisfied wherever he may be. If he's in this material existence, or he's in the spiritual existence, it doesn't matter to him because he sees the material existence as the energy of Krishna. He's already in the spiritual world, even in this material world, you understand? You may say, how is that possible? But here's a gross example. Many years ago, I was preaching in the prison, a federal prison in the U.S. So, my experience, I would go in, every Saturday I would go in for like 2 hours, and then I would come out. I had no trouble walking in and out of the prison through all the security gates. The prisoners could never get through those, you see. But I had special clearance. I could go in and out of the prison. So, my experience, my feeling being in that prison and the prisoner's feeling of being in that prison is totally different. Because I was a, quote, liberated soul. You see, I had free access to go in and out of the prison. They did not. They were forced to stay. So, when one becomes fully Krishna conscious, he becomes a liberated soul, he has free access. Just like Narada Muni, if he wants to go to Goloka, he can do that. If he wants to come to Wellington, you know, he can go anywhere just by his desire. He's completely free to move anywhere in the material and spiritual worlds. So a liberated soul, he can be anywhere. He's already in the spiritual existence. Actually, Prabhupada explains that a pure devotee is always living in Vrindavan. Wherever he goes, he's in Vrindavan. Wherever Prabhupada came, he was in Vrindavan. And wherever we were with Srila Prabhupada, we felt we were in Vrindavan. Because he carried Vrindavan in his heart. Wherever he went, he was in Vrindavan. Prabhupada explains the pure devotee, you see, is a very popular pilgrimage place. In India, people like to go to Vrindavan to get purified. But the pure devotee who's already living in Vrindavan, he doesn't require to go to Vrindavan because he's already there. At every minute he's in Vrindavan. And he goes to Vrindavan to purify it of the sins deposited by the pilgrims who go there to get purified. That is his kindness. He goes to Vrindavan out of kindness to purify that Dhamma, the sins deposited by the materialistic devotees who go there to get purified. So, in this way, the pure devotee is constantly living in Vrindavan. He's seeing Krishna at every minute. He's associating with Krishna at every minute, wherever he is. So either way, it doesn't matter to such a person. He simply wants to become a pure devotee. That's his aim. Of course, for the neophyte, it's very good to desire to go back to home, back to Godhead. But one becomes advanced in Krishna consciousness. One already feels he's there. He doesn't have a need to go there. He already feels that he's there. Because he feels how Krishna is present with him at every minute. He doesn't feel a need. I have to get out of this material world. He's already out of it. Even while he's within his body, he's already out of this material world. You see? Yes.
Are these the people you call Nitya Siddhas? Are these the people that you call Nitya Siddhas?
Yes, a sadhana siddha though. A sadhana siddha. Once you're a siddha, you're a siddha. Whether you're an eternally liberated soul who has come from the spiritual world to save us poor suffering fellows in this material existence, or you're a poor suffering fellow or woman, you see, who became liberated by the mercy of the pure devotee, in either case, once you're a siddha, you're a siddha. You're perfect. You're beyond this material existence. Even if you're a conditioned soul who became liberated by the mercy of the pure devotee, doesn't matter. Once you're siddha, you're a siddha. You're liberated. You're perfect. You understand? Yes.
But after listening to what all you have said, one might conclude that, well, I get this life only once, I get only one opportunity. I'm already having a great life. I'll make the best use of this. What guarantee is that what you are telling is true, and that if I follow you, I will go back to the spiritual world when I'm already having a great life here? So what do you say?
I'm already enjoying life to the max right now. What? Who needs your Krishna consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is described in the Bhagavad Gita. This material world is Bikalyam Ashashvatam. It is a place of misery and it is a temporary place. So, one may argue, well, you people, for you it is Bikalyam. Therefore, for you it's all right to become Krishna conscious. But I don't need it because for me this material world is Sakalyam. I'm very, very happy here. I don't need your Krishna consciousness. You people need it because you're miserable people. But I don't need it because for me it is Sukalyam. But what is the second word? Ashashvatam, temporary. My dear sir, you are enjoying now. But how much you'll be enjoying in the future, you see, that remains to be seen. There was one time a little mouse... And he was being very much tormented by the cat. Every time he came out of his mouse hole trying to get something to eat, that cat was waiting to pounce on him and eat him. So the little mouse was going hungry in his mouse hole. He was in a lot of anxiety, you see. But one day the cat fell sound asleep and the mouse decided, I'm going to make a run for it. He went next door to the yogi's hut. It was a powerful yogi. So he went to the yogi and said, Yogi Raj, I am greatly tormented by this cat. What can I do? Please help me. He said, well, my dear mouse, if you like, I can turn you into a cat. Would you like that? The cat will never bother you anymore. Yes, yes, make me a cat. All right, poof, you become a cat. You see. Meow. Now I have it made. Cat will never bother me. Oh, this is great. But then he went out in the street and then a dog came running. They're running up the tree, you know. Finally the dog got tired and when he goes back to the yogi, oh, Yogi Raj, this dog is bothering me now. What to do? Well, I can make you a dog. Would you like that? Yes, yes, make me a dog. Dog, you see. So now he's dog. You see. Now no problem. The dogs won't bother me, the cats won't bother me, but then, into that Bengali village, then came one of those famous Bengali tigers. Oh, everyone is in great fear. The tiger has come into the village. Oh, tiger, tiger. He went running back to the yogi and said, Yogi, there's a tiger, there's a tiger. What to do? Well, I can make you a tiger. Yes, yes, yes. Tiger. Now the tiger, he has very good facility, you see, in one sense. He doesn't require a knife and fork, he doesn't require a stove, you see, an oven, a refrigerator, just pounce and eat, you see. But there is one difficulty with being tiger. Whenever he goes for his meals go running away as fast as they can. In fact, Prabhupada describes in the jungle there's a little bird. The little bird, whenever the tiger goes looking, goes on his lunch break, you see. Whenever the tiger goes out on lunch break, that little bird sounds an alarm and all the animals head for the hills. They go running as fast as they can. The little bird will sound the alarm, you see. And everyone goes running. So that tiger, you can go for many days with a very hungry belly, you see. Where's something to eat? Where's something to eat? But now, here is this tiger, you see. He's sitting in this hut with a nice plump yogi. You understand? So, in fact, the tiger is sitting the yogi is here and the tiger is sitting by the door, so the yogi has no escape also. So the yogi is not stupid. He saw that look in the tiger's eye. He said, "So, you want to eat me?"
Yeah.
Tiger said, "Yes." The tiger said, "Oh, really?" Poof, again. Punar musica bhava. Again, you become a mouse, you see. So now they're thinking, I am enjoying like anything. I am big tiger, you see. I am powerful businessman. I am big, big politician. I am rock and roll star. I am Michael Jackson, you see. Big, big star, you see. But you saw what happened to him? Again, he became a mouse. So now you're enjoying like anything. Your big, big famous personality, you see. This person, that person. Politician, athlete, business magnate, you see. Famous humanitarian, famous scholar, big, big this, big, big that, you see. Yes, I'm enjoying like anything, but punar musika bhava. As soon as you burn off the reactions for your past pious activities, which elevated you to that position of enjoyment in this material world, the rug gets pulled out from under you, and again you become a little mouse, you see, scrounging for your meals in this material existence. So, all right, Mr. Tiger, enjoy while you can. There's another story in this connection that the sage, he was giving four different kinds of benedictions to the prince. He gave the benediction that may you live a long life, because the prince, he's in that Sakalyam position you were describing. He's enjoying like anything, but as soon as his karma runs out, then he's going to be dragged down from that position. So the sage wished him, may you live a long life. And see, the other person, there was the butcher. See, the
Brahmachari.
Huh?
Brahmachari.
Yes, the Brahmachari, doing all these austerities. Tapasa Brahmacharena, you see. He wished the Brahmachari, may you die immediately. Because he's doing all these penances to qualify himself for entering the spiritual world, so let him die instantly so he can go back to the spiritual world immediately. His blessing was, may you die immediately. And then the butcher, he blessed him, don't live and don't die. That was a blessing for the butcher. Because now, don't live, because it's a horrible scene. Going every day and slaughtering the poor animals is living in hell every day. You see, the people who work in slaughterhouses, they have to get drunk all the time. It's a horrible thing. They go home from work and get drunk. I mean, they're a horrible mentality to be a butcher in a slaughterhouse, you know. So he said, don't live and don't die, because as soon as you die, you're going to get the reactions for all these animals you've murdered, you see. And then, but for the Vaishnava, he said, live or die, it doesn't matter, you see, because you're already situated in transcendence. So the person you describe, he's like the prince. We wish them that they may live forever, because as soon as their life is finished, all of their happiness will be finished, you see. More power to you. Good luck, sir. Enjoy it while you can. That's all we can say. As soon as you burn off those reactions for your previous pious activities, the whole thing will be finished. The whole thing will be finished. And you'll be back in the scrounging for your next meal. So now you're thinking, I'm a big successful businessman. But someday you'll become a pauper begging in the streets. That's a thing. Any other questions? Yes?
Maharaj, you said that you hope to see us in Vaikuntha. To go there, when does one know that it's time that you qualify to go there, and how does one qualify to go to
Yeah. one qualifies by complete surrender to Krishna. Sarvadharman put it in this way. Krishna says, give up all everything else and just be completely my devotee, you see. The Supreme Person. He is ordering us that we must surrender to Him. So, He tells us that you should surrender to my representative. If you want to be my devotee, you should become the devotee of my devotee. So that is the qualification for entering that spiritual world. You must fully surrender yourself to the representative of Krishna, the bona fide spiritual master, Shishi Gornitai Ki Jaya. So, actually, when you have done that, Prabhupada told us in Los Angeles, initiation, at the moment of diksha or initiation, one achieves immortality at that very moment. That very moment when the spiritual master gives the name and the beads, if one remains loyal to the order that he has received from his Guru Maharaj, then actually he enters into immortality at that very minute. So the qualification of the going back to the spiritual world is to become completely surrendered to Krishna and his representative, the bona fide spiritual master. And that from that very moment of initiation, one is already living in his eternal, immortal existence, provided he doesn't disobey the spiritual master. Question?
Yeah, I'm just interested, curious. According to Bhagavad Gita, is it okay to consume milk the way it's produced today?
Is it okay to take milk the way we get it?
Consume milk the way it's produced today, like not free range or...
The way the milk is consumed today.
The way the milk is produced
today. Actually, there are different cow's milk.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, it is very sinful to kill the cows and to abuse the cows. It's the most sinful, horrible thing that one can do. The karma, in fact, the karma from abusing cows is so heavy that it is practically the cause of all the difficulties we're having on this planet right now. If we can simply stop this abuse of the cows, the whole world will become peaceful and happy, because the cow is the most dear animal to Krishna. So, the cow's milk, actually it is very beneficial for the human being. It is described as miracle food. It gives one the brain tissue, develops the brain tissues for understanding higher knowledge. So, one may argue, well, the cows are being so much abused, we should just boycott milk, and that would help to put a stop to the cow abuse. So we respect that position. The real solution is to have protected cows. Just like many devotees, just like I just came from Fiji, there's one devotee there, his family, they keep 7 cows. And so they're getting all varieties of nice milk products, you see. So that is the actual standard of Vedic culture. You keep the cow and protect the cow. Some people say, well, you shouldn't really milk the cow, just let the calves drink the milk. Because it is natural. It's not natural for the humans to take milk. They argue like that. But the fact is, the cow gives, her body yields much more milk than that calf can drink. So actually, it is the arrangement of God that the human being, they will also drink the milk of the cow. After we stop drinking our mother's best milk, we have our second mother waiting to give us her milk. So that is the actual standard of one of the standard items given in by Krishna for a human diet, the milk products. It is very, very good for the health. And taken in the proper quantity, in the proper way, milk is very, very nutritious, delicious, and gives all good brain tissue for understanding transcendental knowledge. So the question remains, though, what about drinking milk from cows that are going to the slaughterhouse? Actually, by taking that milk, those cows are benefited. They're being, those cows are being engaged in Krishna's service if we offer their milk to Krishna. But of course, ideally, we have our own protected cows and just taking that milk. That's the ideal standard. And that's what we have to establish in our movement. Well, one devotee suggested, just like now they have carbon footprint offsets, that every time you fly in an airplane, you plant this many trees to offset your, you know, the carbon emitted by your airplane ride, you see. So now the devotees are saying we should have the slaughterhouse cow's milk offset. Every time you drink milk from a slaughterhouse, you know, a cow that's going to the slaughterhouse, you should donate that much money to a cow protection program. So in this way, if you get everybody into this milk offset program, then we can establish cow protection on this planet. We can still get the benefit of the cow's milk to purify our intelligence. Those cows that are now being sent to the slaughterhouse will still get the blessings of having their milk offered to Krishna. At the same time, we can create a revolution of monies, get the whole planet into this mentality. This the carbon footprint offset is a big thing now. How many millions of dollars are going into carbon footprint offsets now? You see, it's a huge thing happening now. So we should have the same thing going with the milk. Devotees should be, and the general public should understand the benefit of cow protection, so that all over the world we can gradually transform this planet into a wonderful, peaceful atmosphere where everyone is happy. Actually, the human society will never be happy until we make the cows happy. That's what we have to do. So we have to move in that direction of making, we have to make the cows happy. We have to stop abusing them, stop slaughtering them. Utilize their gifts very nicely in Krishna's service. This is the perfection of human life, to utilize everything in Krishna's service. So does that answer your question?
What about cows that are injected with hormones?
Yeah, this is such thing is very unnatural. It started a few years ago. I mean, it's crazy what they're doing now. One can easily avoid such milk. You can in the health food stores. You can easily get, even in regular grocery stores, you can get hormone-free milk. It's obviously. I mean, who wants to take growth hormones? You know, they don't know the result. If you feed those growth hormones to young children, how it could affect their bodies also, you see.
The cows carrying more milk than they should carry because they produce more.
No, it's completely demoniac, you see. They're thinking, we will get more milk out of these cows by chemical manipulation. It's a very demoniac thing. Actually, the real secret is, if you want to get, the cows will give more milk naturally if you give them love. The cows that we've seen, the cows on our farm, years ago, our cows in Gita Nagari, the USA, they were giving huge quantity of milk because we were given love. Don't give them chemicals, give them love. And they will give milk like anything because they have loving reciprocation. But my duty years ago in Dallas was to go the weekly milk run to a dairy farm. We make a whole van full of big containers of milk for the temple for a whole week. The cows, you couldn't even approach them. They were so afraid of human beings because they knew that the human beings were their enemy. You couldn't approach them. But if you go to a Krishna conscious farm, the cows are very affectionate because they know they're being loved. So we have to, if we will give the cows our love instead of giving them these so-called growth hormones, then they will give much more milk and be very healthy milk also. Yes?
Is milk and meat?
Yes, that's one of those bumper stickers. Milk is meat. Actually, milk is blood. It's milk is a transformation of the blood of the cow. So, if they want to eat the meat of the cow, you see, which is their desire now, the so-called rascals, McDonald's, you see. So they want to eat the flesh of the cow, the meat. But actually what they're really interested in is the blood. They have that taste for blood. They have bloodlust, you see. Because that flesh is oozing with blood. It is very gross. I don't know if I should even talk like this from the Vyasa son. But I've seen one man in the store, the meat was dripping blood all over the floor of the grocery store as he was checking out. It was so gross. Nobody was disgusted. But I was very disgusted. A big puddle of blood there on the floor by the cash register. It was so disgusting. And they want to eat this stuff. It's crazy. They have a lust for blood. They want to eat the blood. But the milk is nothing but a transformation of the cow's blood. So if you want to have the blood of the cow, take it in a wonderful way, in the form of milk. And she is voluntarily giving her blood in the form of milk. You see. So if you want the meat of the cow, take the transformation of her blood, and then you'll become happy. You see. So we can make very nice preparations with paneer and so many things. The meat eaters become very happy and satisfied. And that's?
If we have many cows, like big farms do, we may not have a manpower to hand milk with. Is it okay to use machines to milk cows or not?
Is machine milking okay? Well, it's not the nicest thing, I mean, you know. I mean, we should, there's enough hands available to milk the cows, we just have to preach and get people to volunteer to be, you know, milk the cows. I don't see why we should have to use machines to milk the cows. That's not a very nice thing. Is that love? To milk the cow with a machine?
Huh? If there are 500 cows or 1,000 cows, you know, for the cow protection.
We just have to make more devotees then. Have bigger families. The grahastha should have more kids.
No.
My father, my grandfather, my father's family, there were 7 kids. They had a dairy farm and they have 7 kids. You see? So we have more kids. Have milk the cows. Train all the kids to milk the cows. You see.
Well, in India, they're still milking with hens.
Huh?
In India, a lot of farmers are still milking with hens.
A lot of farmers are
milking the cows with hens.
Cows and
with hens.
Yeah.
But Vedic culture is that each person has a cow in their home and a land. So they can be self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Not that one person has 500 cows.
What about Nanda Maharaj then? Of course, he had a big community also.
Yeah.
The Brijabasis took very good care of the cows. That's a fact. Krishna was so much taking care of the cows, he even wanted to arrange shoes for all the cows so they could walk comfortably. Yeah.
Yes, Maharaj. Just changing the topic a bit. You were talking about how when the desire in the heart grows, that Lord Krishna will then reciprocate and he will make arrangements. Why is it that some people go through that process where the desire is there to save, whereas most don't?
So why is it that... Krishna explains exactly what you're saying, Prabhu. Manushanam sahasreshu kashchid yatati siddhaye. Out of thousands among men, only one will endeavor for perfection. So why is that? Why is it so rare that one person will take an interest in becoming delivered from birth and death and the vast majority of population will not? It's a very interesting question to analyze. That's what I like about giving these lectures. I get to analyze so many interesting questions. Like yours is a very interesting question. It's like here in Wellington, how many people have come for this lecture, you see? We're revealing the absolute truth in full. Anyone who comes here, they can realize the absolute truth. How to become perfect in spiritual life. We're giving everything needed in this lecture, how to do that. You see. So why so few people have come? Why are they totally a vast population here? What is the total population in Wellington?
400,000.
400,000? How many have come? What is the percentage here? We have maybe 40, let's say we have 40 people here, maybe 50. But a very small percentage. It's not even 1%, you see, of the population has come. So it's very, very, very rare. Why is it so rare? Of course, if you take the total population of the total existence, the vast majority are Krishna conscious. It's only an insignificant fraction are not interested in Krishna consciousness. If you go into a prison, how many people have wonderful feelings about being loyal to their government leaders? Go into a prison and say, see how many people have the desire to be loyal servants of the state. Practically none. That's why they're in prison. So the reason is the numbers are so small here is because we're in the prison. Right now we're in that place which is filled up with all those people who rebelled against the authority of the Supreme. So it's natural that very few would be interested. You see. It's a natural thing. In the liberated portion of the existence, the spiritual sky, then everyone is very keen to serve Krishna. But here it's very rare to find somebody who will actually awaken to realize that this is not the place for me. It's an interesting phenomenon. Why don't more people awaken? I mean, by awakening your Krishna consciousness, you become totally free of all anxiety. So why more people aren't doing it? Well, the educational system right now is perpetuating ignorance. That's the main reason. The whole system is perpetuating ignorance. As soon as you come out of the body, your mother's body, what's the first thing you hear? Oh, it's a boy. It's a girl. Immediately, bodily consciousness. You're immediately being programmed. I'm a boy. I'm a girl. You see? Immediately we're put into bodily consciousness. That spell of bodily consciousness is being cast on us from our very birth. So we've been trained very carefully to identify with this body and to think that my happiness is to gratify the senses of this body. So in such a situation, it's very, very, very rare that someone would realize that there's something wrong here. It's a very rare situation. So what is it that causes that to happen? That's a very deep, deep question. What is it that causes that one living entity out of millions of living entities to question and doubt this process which is blindly accepted by everyone, namely material sense gratification? What is the phenomenon, what is the mechanism by which one of those living entities will say, hey, no, this isn't right. It's got to be something better than this. Prabhupada explains it's actually by the mercy of a pure devotee. You see, that's how one awakens, by the mercy of the pure devotee. Brahmande brahmite konda bhagyavan jeev guru krishna prasade pai bhakti lata bij. After wandering through this material existence, the upper planets, the lower planets, through millions and millions of births, one living entity who is very, very fortunate, Pokona Bhagyavan Jeev, one living entity who is very, very fortunate, he received the seed of bhakti within his heart by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. So the status quo is ignorance. That is the default position, ignorance. So, with the pure devotees, they wander throughout this material existence, planting the bhakti seeds everywhere. Those who get that, who are fortunate enough to come in contact with the pure devotee, to get that seed through the ears into the heart, in the form of Shabda Brahma, transcendental knowledge, if they will take advantage of that seed and they will cultivate it, then they will achieve perfection. So, everyone is being given that opportunity. And again, we're back to the same question, why only a few people take it? Well, whatever the answer may be as to why, at least we should take it. I really can't say why one living entity takes it and another one doesn't. Can you say?
Isn't it again coming back to the free will, independence?
Yeah. You know, what is the psychological principle by which one living entity abuses his free will and the other properly utilizes it? That's a very difficult question to answer.
Is it karmic? Is it karmic?
What is that?
Karmic.
Who's saying? Oh, okay.
Karmic.
Karma?
Karmic effect.
He's saying, is it karmic effect?
Karmic.
Yeah, that
is also
well, coming out of karma chakra is not karmic. It's karmic when they remain an illusion. But karma, if one takes advantage of the mercy of the pure devotee, then comes out of karma chakra, you see. So that is akarmic. There are two things happening. There's karmic and akarmic. So as long as we remain in the realm of karma, we remain caught up in this. It's not that by karma I come to Krishna consciousness. Sometimes people use that as an excuse. We say, we'd like you to come to our temple. They say, well, when it's my karma, then I will come. But actually, it will never be your karma to come. Because karma chakra keeps us in illusion. When you said, I'm sick and tired of being in karma chakra, birth, death, old age, and disease, I want out of karma chakra, then you can come. The living entity has the choice whether I remain in karma or whether I get out of karma. He has that choice. He can make that decision. So when he's ready to come out of karma, then he can come to Krishna consciousness. Krishna will give him all facility. It's a very difficult question to answer. But it's up to, as Mismology pointed out, it's free will.
Krishna gave Arjuna all the knowledge.
Yeah.
Bhagavad Gita, and then he said, do whatever you like. So here we are here. And we are hearing this message.
Mm-hmm.
And we make our own choice whether to accept it or to just live in ignorance.
Yeah, how many people in this room will go back to God in this lifetime? That's very good. He's determined. That's very good. That's the mood, you see. I'm determined in this lifetime I will go back to Godhead. I'm taking the order of my spiritual masters, my life and soul, and I'll never deviate. That will guarantee one goes back. Actually, if you want to go back in this lifetime, you can go. You just got to make your determination and stick with it. You see, that is called diksha, initiation. I'm making this solid commitment. I have my guru. I'm going to follow him no matter what. Even if the whole world tells me I'm an idiot, I don't care. I'm going to follow this pathway. And then you're guaranteed it. Go to sleep and wake up with Krishna at the end of this lifetime. Wouldn't that be great? Just like every morning, every night we take rest, we get up the next day. Just imagine going to rest and waking up in Goloka Vrindavan. That's the boon given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Anyone who sings their Gavasakam prayers during the Brahma Muhurta, just like we do at Mangalarti every day, you see, Brahma Muhurta, Gavasakam prayers, in the ninth prayer of the Gravasakam, which is the follow-up prayer. He says, anyone who will chant this mantra, this Gravasakam, during the Brahma Muhurta, they will, at the end of this lifetime, they will have the boon of being engaged in the direct service of Lord Sri Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan. So if you would like to be guaranteed entrance into the spiritual world and part of Krishna's pastimes when you leave this body, then we encourage you to sing the Mangalarti, the Gavastakam prayers every day during the Brahma Muhurta hour. Whether you're here or in your home, do it every day, and that will be you'll get a great blessing from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur for going back to Godhead in this lifetime.
Is that
Mangalarti, yes. Yeah, some less realized Gaudiya sannyasi, he criticizes ISKCON. He criticizes Prabhupada for engaging us in singing their Gavastakam prayers during Brahma Muhurta hour. But we don't listen to such less realized spiritual masters. And we hear from our Srila Prabhupada. He is the pure representative of Vishnu. He is the fully realized, fully empowered representative of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So he engages us in chanting these Gavastakam prayers during the Mangalarti. So we're getting a little, our time is going, I think, way over beyond the limit. And we don't want to do that because nobody will be hearing my lecture anyway. Everybody will be just thinking about prasadam. So we'll stop here. Thank you all very, very much for so kindly hearing and inquiring on these topics, these transcendental topics. Raja Vidyush, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
If they want to hear more,
they can come again tomorrow. You want to hear more? What's the next lecture? Yeah. Tomorrow morning's Bhagavatam class?
No, maybe a lecture.
Hmm?
Yeah, tomorrow morning, Maharaj.
7:30. They hear at 7:30 tomorrow morning.
And then tomorrow evening as well?
Tomorrow evening, a lecture here? Okay. What time? 7:30 and 7:30. That makes it really easy. Just remember 7:30.
Also, if anybody wants personal darshan, please contact.
Anybody wants to have a personal darshan, I'm willing to do that. So you can, if you don't know where I'm staying, ask one of the devotees, and he'll point you in the direction of my quarters. Jai Hare Krishna.